WrestleMania is filled with obstacles. None more ominous than the Elimination Chamber.
The Elimination Chamber is the last opportunity for the WWE superstars to main event WrestleMania.
The range of emotions is startling. You look on the faces of these superstars, you see fear, trepidation, intensity, almost an unknowing of what to expect.
Championships, careers, and legacies will be at stake.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
We're on the road to WrestleMania, but there's a sharp left turn ahead, and I think I'm just going to keep straight and drive right off the cliff. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Smack Talk Radio Live. My name is Corey Callahan, joined alongside James McDonald, and we are broadcasting to you from the Smack Talk Studios in Vancouver, British Columbia. James, E-Chain, thoughts?
Well, to be honest, Corey, I can't wait for this event to be over so we can go full steam ahead to the biggest show of the year. I mean, nothing really interests me about this pay-per-view aside from seeing who the champions will be after it's all said and done. Now, that being said, we'll run down the entire card in our tail of the tape, and in the top five, we're going to be counting down the five best masked WWE wrestlers.
Definitely a jam-packed show tonight, and aside from previewing Elimination Chamber, there was big news on the business front today, and we'll get you caught up in our post-to-post report. And in our local wrestling scene tonight, we're talking to the Bollywood Lions, Harv and Gurv Sira, who just made their debuts for the new India wrestling promotion, Ring Ka King. As always, you can check out www.smacktalkradiolive.com or join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Right now, though, let's Texas Cloverleaf things off. Tail of the tape.
It's time for the tail of the tape.
It's Thursday evening.
Yes, it is.
Smack Talk Radio Live's back on the air. Damn, it feels good to say that.
It does, doesn't it?
It's been a while since we've done a full show.
It's been a couple weeks, yeah.
Yeah. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing real good, buddy. How about you?
I'm doing really well. I've been just wrapped up like crazy in work, but aside from that, I still have found time to do Smack Talk Radio Live, and I'm pretty happy about it.
And I'm sure our legions of fans appreciate it.
All millions and millions of them. What's been going on around town since we last did a show here? I'm just trying to think. Well, this morning at work, we were talking about the fact that possibly Seattle might have another basketball team.
That'd be good. I mean, if there's one town, in my opinion, that's really been put the screws to as far as sports is concerned, it's got to be Seattle. I mean,
well, what's interesting is that a private investor named Christopher Hansen, he is apparently a hedge fund manager and a Seattle native. He's offered to build a stadium privately in Seattle. He's already bought the land for it, kind of near Quest Field and Safeco Field. And apparently, if they actually were successful in getting an NBA team, He's already said he'd like to actually get an NHL team to Seattle.
Really?
Which would make a very interesting rivalry with Seattle and Vancouver.
That would be kind of cool. So is he going to be putting up the money out of his own pocket then for this new arena?
Or? Yes. Yes.
Oh, wow.
A private investment for him. And, you know, obviously the city has to jump on board. But I think that'd be huge. We almost had a similar thing in Vancouver actually one time where the Vancouver Whitecaps ownership group had proposed to build a brand new stadium
right
on Vancouver's waterfront.
I remember that now,
privately,
yeah.
And for whatever reason, the city of Vancouver nixed it, but I think that was a bad move on their part.
City of Vancouver for you.
No Funcouver. So, anything else?
Not that I can think of, no.
All right, well, before we jump into anything wrestling related, let's just remind everyone, www.smacktalkradiolive.com. Or, of course, you could join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio. Now, we are going to be back Monday for SRL on a Monday night. If you haven't checked that show out yet, that comes on live immediately after Monday Night Raw, 9 o'clock Pacific time. You can log on to our Facebook page, get the live streaming link, and just listen to us as we run down Monday Night Raw basically as soon as it happens. And pretty soon we're actually going to be including phone calls into that show. So
I'm excited for that.
Yeah. If you can't get in, I mean, we haven't done the phone call thing yet. But in the meantime, we encourage everyone to send in their emails or comments on our Facebook page. And we will read them on the air as long as they don't suck.
That's right. And our email address again, onair@smacktalkradiolive.com.
Okay, so Monday Night Raw this week. Obviously, it's the go-home show week into the Elimination Chamber. Before we get into specifics, general thoughts on this week's Monday Night Raw.
Terrible. I hated it.
Just right off the bat.
It was terrible. Let's do a comparison. Compared to last year's go-home show leading into Elimination Chamber as opposed to this year's. Last year, we had The Rock show up and be announced as the host of WrestleMania 27, and he just cut the most amazing 20-minute promo that we had seen in years and years and years. Excitement was at an all-time high. And then we fast-forward 365 days later, and we got Eve Torres kissing John Cena.
I know. It was a pretty bad show. And the thing was, is I didn't realize how, at the time I watched Monday Night Raw, because I wasn't able to watch it live, so here's my story. I worked 18 hours that day. I came home at like midnight and I started watching it and I realized halfway through that I was asleep. And, you know, I woke up and actually my girlfriend woke me up and she said, yeah, it's time to go to bed. And the thing was, is I thought at the time I was like, oh, it's actually not a bad Raw because I had watched the Triple H Undertaker segment,
which was the only saving grace from this Raw.
But then when I woke up the next morning and I started watching Raw, I was like, oh my God. God, this is bad.
Like the whole debate at the beginning,
I
understand what they were trying to do with that.
I think it was because I was tired, but I thought that was actually quite interesting at the time when I first saw it. I was like, oh, they've never done this before. But then I'm thinking, this is probably going to just be terrible. But when I watched it originally, I was like, oh, it's not that bad. But I think it was because I was tired. So, but I know the whole thing was just terrible from beginning to end. And I've read a lot of reviews about Monday Night Raw this week, and I have yet to see a really positive one. But I did find a couple positives in the show, and we'll get to it. But definitely more negatives than positive.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, just a horrible, horrible Monday Night Raw. One of the worst I've seen in a while, actually.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is also go-home week for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. Are you excited about that?
Well, like I said at the top of the show, I'm not... No, not really too excited. I'm not going to be shelling out $50, I'll tell you that.
You're not?
Definitely not, no.
Oh, come on.
No, I'll catch the review afterwards. And like I said, I'm only excited to see who the champions are going to be after the whole thing is done.
They've given us no reason to really order this pay-per-view.
No. None. I mean, you go back to Raw on Monday night, they hardly built on the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view itself at all.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I don't know. It seems their focus is all over the place, creatively anyways.
Well, I think they're just sort of caught in that transition period where they want to start pushing the WrestleMania matches, but they got this one show to get out of the way first. That kind of... It's probably a bit of a struggle creatively.
And like I was touching on last week, I really think the whole Elimination Chamber gimmick is in the wrong place in the year schedule of pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. Like, this should be somewhere in the summertime, and it should be a show where they're ending things off. Well, not starting a build-up to their biggest show.
And like I've said before, the whole attraction for the writing staff to the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view is that you really can go a million different directions at that show. You know what I mean?
Like,
if you're having problems creatively on what feuds you're going to go with at WrestleMania or who's going to have the belt, the Elimination Chamber is just so random that you can come out with five different possibilities and you know, it's not a standard pay-per-view structure.
And you can switch it at the last moment too, right?
Exactly. There's no rhyme or reason to how they finish the show. And, you know, you really can just go a million different ways with the Elimination Chamber match. And you also can start three or four different feuds as a result of one match, you know, the Elimination Chamber match. So, I don't know. That's why they like it. But I agree with you. I don't think the fans like this show heading into WrestleMania.
No, it should be... Yeah, it should be something where you close off storylines instead of starting them. Yeah. That's just my opinion.
We'll get to the Elimination Chamber match and everything else with the pay-per-view in just a little bit. But there's something bigger that I think we should talk about first. And that is the one bright spot of Monday Night Raw this week. And that would include the return of the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Walk away because that's what a coward does.
No, you don't understand what's going on here. You can't. You sit there on your ranch with your wife and your kids. Not a care in the world, Sean. I've got responsibilities, real life responsibilities. Like it or not, whether anybody likes it or not, I don't give a damn if they do or not. This, all of it is gonna be mine. And it's my responsibility, and that responsibility weighs like a ton on my shoulders, even now. You look at The Undertaker like an opponent, and sure, for years, that's how I looked at it, too. He was just someone to go through. I don't look at it that way anymore, Sean. I can't. Because of that responsibility, I look at it, Undertaker as a brand. A brand that is good for business, Sean. And I can't let that brand end because it's bad for business. You, me, Undertaker, Sean, we are the end of an era. You know it and I know it. The end of an era of a different breed. Smash Mouth style that doesn't exist. We left it all in this ring every night. You, me, him, we'd all pay the ultimate sacrifice in this ring if we had to, without question.
Now, I gotta say, I really enjoyed this segment with HBK and Triple H, and it really made me believe, personally, that Triple H, if he was to take on The Undertaker at WrestleMania, he's got a really good shot this year.
Yeah, it was easily the best part of Raw this week, was this whole segment between...
It was so good. I thought it was so good.
No, it was
for so many reasons.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, like, I'm interested to hear what you think before I get into what I think.
Well, I got to be honest with you. Before this week, I wasn't really feeling the whole Undertaker-Triple H rematch that much. But after this segment, it kind of makes a little bit of sense. Triple H going out and explaining how he doesn't want to end the brand of The Undertaker because it is bad for business, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, The Undertaker does draw. The Undertaker does make money. So it makes sense, Triple H being in the position that he is, you know, not to end The Undertaker because, you know, they'd lose that source of revenue. Mm-hmm. And what did you think about Triple H alluding to the fact that one day the whole WWE would be his?
Well, it was the first time that we had ever heard him kind of officially come out and say that.
Yeah.
He is the successor to Vince McMahon.
I thought that was...
He's never really made reference to that before. We've never heard of that. People have obviously speculated about that before. But I thought, again, I've said this about Triple H before. Everything he does in that ring, he just makes so... He makes it so believable. And that the face-to-face with him and Shawn Michaels, I just believed everything he was saying. He just brought this sense of realism to wrestling, and I was just a huge fan of it. I really enjoyed it. Now, you had mentioned to me that you weren't a big fan of the fact that he had kind of dissed everyone else in the locker room.
And that isn't the first time he's done it either.
No, because he kind of did that last year heading into WrestleMania with The Undertaker as well.
The whole broomstick comment?
Yeah. I personally don't have a problem with it because the realistic fact is he is... at a level higher than everyone else. There's no question about it. The guy has been here for a long time. He's been through hell and back, and he is above the other current locker room guys. 10 years, 15 years down the road, those guys can say the same thing about the next generation.
And
I don't have a problem with that.
Guys underneath him too. That's the mark. That's the mark to me between a great wrestler and a good wrestler. The greats are the ones who can take the guys below them and elevate them up. Guys like Batista, guys like Randy Orton, right? Triple H really helped these guys along on their career, and that's what makes a great wrestler. And where was I going with this?
Well, the one thing I was going to say was the fact that, the whole brand comment about The Undertaker, I really enjoyed that.
It made sense.
It's the first time The Undertaker is a brand. There's no denying it. Now, you could argue whether or not he should have left that behind the curtain or out in the middle of the ring. This is a bit of a reality era for the WWE. So I personally enjoyed having the future chairman of the WWE say to everyone that The Undertaker is more than just a wrestler. He's a brand, and they make millions of dollars on this guy, you know, with t-shirt sales, with DVD sales, with the history that comes with The Undertaker. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that you can promote WrestleMania with Undertaker's winning streak alone, he is a brand, and he's worth millions. And if Triple H is the guy to actually beat him at WrestleMania, obviously you're ending the era of The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the choice he has to make. Does he want to lead the company with The Undertaker still going? Or does he want to start the WWE on a fresh note with no Undertaker at all? I think that is a great story for this match heading into WrestleMania.
No, I totally agree with you. I really like the way that Triple H added that sense of realism into his promo that he had with HBK there. But one thing I didn't like, though, is how he missed out on guys like Kane and Mark Henry, saying how those three guys were the only guys from that era.
Yeah, he's a bit off by saying him, Michaels, and Undertaker are the last of an era. There's a lot of guys that were part of his era, which if they had the opportunity to still be there, they would.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only reason they aren't there anymore is because Triple H's father-in-law got rid of them. You know what I mean? Like, there's numerous wrestlers that are part of that era that if they could still be there, they would.
Mm-hmm.
That part I didn't agree with. But I also agree with him when he said that they are the last of an era with this Smash Mouth style. I mean, they really are. I mean, wrestling, when they were on the road 360 days a year or whatever it was, you know, it was a totally different style. And it was completely different from what the wrestlers are doing today.
It wasn't as huge an entity as it is nowadays.
No, but what he was referring to was the fact that everything wasn't so scripted and everything wasn't so polished, and there wasn't a team of writers working behind the scenes. Like, you know, they had to go out there and there was a sense of improv, right?
Yeah, you would go out and cut a promo off the cuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
But that being said, Triple H's supposed future company is also holding current wrestlers back from doing that. It's not that the wrestlers nowadays can't do that. It's that they're not allowed to do that. So he's kind of wrong in a sense that, you know, he's putting him, Michaels, and Undertaker on a different pedestal, saying they have this Smash Mouth style, or they represent the Smash Mouth style. But at the same time, they're also preventing the current stars from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I really like this segment. I thought it was excellent. And if you don't believe that Triple H has a chance of beating The Undertaker this year, there's no one that's going to do it. Because this is a perfect setup to knock The Undertaker down.
Yeah, in conclusion, I got to say, I'm definitely a lot more excited for this match than I was a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're going to talk about this more, I'm sure, on the road to WrestleMania. One thing we should get to, the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. We should run down the whole show. What do you think?
I think that's a very good idea.
We should probably start off with the fact that there's two Elimination Chamber matches. Let's start off with the more important one. Would you agree with me when I say that?
100%.
All right, the Raw Elimination Chamber match.
My list of accomplishments in my career outweighs the list of accomplishments of you five wannabes incorporated completely. I am here. All five of you are here. And that brings me to you, Punk. Look at me when I'm talking to you, boy. All right, Punk, you might as well give me that world title right now, because your master has come to reclaim what is his. Do you understand what I am saying to you right now?
Oh, God, were you talking to me? I wasn't. I'm sorry. I wasn't listening to a word you were saying. I was remembering when you left and you went and finished seventh on Dancing with the Stars and how...
Well, there you go. That's a little clip of back and forth between Chris Jericho and CM Punk from this week's Monday Night Raw. Now, this, to me, is the match probably on the card that I'm looking forward to the most.
The Raw Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, in the Raw Elimination Chamber, you have CM Punk, Kofi Kingston, The Miz, R-Truth, Dolph Ziggler, and Chris Jericho. Now, the two guys that we heard in the clip, people are really saying that they might be the only two to have a real shot at walking out of there with the title.
You know what? I've got to be... I'm on that boat.
Really?
I honestly, the other four guys to me are just an afterthought. Except for maybe Dolph Ziggler. I could see having possibly an outside chance, but... Really, to me, it's going to only come down to CM Punk and Chris Jericho in this one.
I am going with Dolph Ziggler in this match. I know it sounds so far-fetched at this point because they've absolutely buried Ziggler in the last couple weeks.
Terrible.
Like, it's like he's done something as terrible as Evan Bourne has done.
Jack Swagger style.
I don't understand it, but I still think it's going to be him because the way they have set up Punk and Jericho, I just have this feeling that Jericho is going to screw Punk or Punk is going to screw Jericho right at the second when they're about to win. And I just have this hinting suspicion in the back of my mind that Ziggler is going to sneak in for the quick pin, 1-2-3, or quick victory, I should say. And, you know, that's what's going to give him. Because the thing about Ziggler is if you're going to walk into WrestleMania, as cocky as Ziggler is, you got to have something to back it up. And at the same time, by having Jericho or Punk screw each other to lose the title, you can use that to accelerate their feud as well. So there's a bit of it works both ways in this situation, in my opinion. That being said, I also agree with what we talked about last week, where you almost want to have a belt involved with two wrestlers who are saying that they are the best in the world.
You have to. To me, you have to. That adds credibility to the whole thing. If you take the title belt away, it just, to me, that really diminishes from the whole feud. Mm-hmm. Personally, that's what I think. So if you're saying Dolph Ziggler is going to win this match, do you think he'll be injected then into the Punk-Jericho feud?
No, I don't think so. I still, at this point, am not quite sure who Ziggler is going to take on at WrestleMania. Like, that's still a really big question mark.
Mm-hmm.
But if he wins, obviously, Sheamus could be a possible contender. That's a face versus heel, so it's not far-fetched to have Sheamus versus Ziggler.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
And then just have CM Punk and Jericho without a title, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, what else could you do? I mean, I know it doesn't sound right, but I just feel like that's the way it could go. My opinion.
All right. Well, speaking of Chris Jericho, an interesting thing to note is that 2 weeks ago on Raw, he won a six-pack challenge, so now he's going to be actually the last person released from his pod in the Elimination Chamber match. And it's the first time that we've actually had any idea of what the order of people being released is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you like that they do that?
I don't know. I mean, I kind of would have preferred that it stayed random.
Yeah.
But I can kind of see where they're going with that. It kind of adds to the intrigue of, you know, will CM Punk retain or will Jericho steal it now that he's the last?
Do you like the Elimination Chamber match in general?
It's honestly, I don't think it's the best gimmick that WWE's ever come out with.
I mean, they love it because it looks visually outstanding.
Yeah.
Right? I would love to see these guys, like, get outside the chamber and get up on the roof and, you know, kind of like what they do with Hell in a Cell.
Do you know what it kind of reminds me of? It kind of just reminds me of a six-person Royal Rumble in a sense.
I've never been a fan of it. I don't like the Elimination Chamber. I think it's too slow. Essentially, it's just like it's like a singles match with guys waiting in glass cases. I mean,
it's a six-person Royal Rumble, essentially,
yeah.
Right?
I know.
You start out with two guys, and then you have another four that are entered randomly.
And my other big issue with it is that they don't have any. I've never seen any, like, outstanding move or outstanding punishment dealt out as a result of the chamber.
That's the thing. I mean, it really kind of eliminates the guys who are relied upon for the big spots, guys like Kofi Kingston, right?
I mean, I'm reminded of, like, a Goldberg spear through, or I think it was Edge, or a spear where the guy went through the plexiglass. Mm-hmm. I think it was it Goldberg that did that?
No, I think it was Rey Mysterio that got speared through the plexiglass.
By Edge? Was Goldberg in an Elimination Chamber
match? Yes, he was. Yeah. It was a few years ago.
I think it was Goldberg. I'm trying to remember, but there was a, you know, they do these spots with the plexiglass, which to me aren't that devastating. That's not that big. You go through a plastic piece of glass. I want to see something on the steel or, you know, get up on the roof of the chamber and do a spot up there where you choke slam the guy off. I don't know, something. Something to really make me believe that the chamber actually is intimidating.
Something Mankind-esque.
Something. That's all I'm asking for. Come on, put your bodies on the line here, boys.
I mean, bumping on the steel on the inside, that's nothing.
But would you agree, like, in past Elimination Chamber matches, there hasn't really been anything outstanding as a result of the steel structure?
Yeah, no, I think it does, in a sense, kind of limit them a little
bit.
It
does. I mean, because it probably is really, you know, it probably hurts to take a bump on her.
I would imagine so.
I would think so as well. But okay, so I'm going with Ziggler. You're going, well, this is go-home show week, James. You got to give me a prediction. Are you going with Punk or Jericho in this match?
I'm going to go with CM Punk. I think CM Punk's going to retain.
All right. Well, that's interesting. What would be funny is if Jericho did win it, and then the next week on Raw, Punk comes out to talk to him, and Jericho just holds up the belt. Just like what Punk did on Raw. That would be interesting.
So it just becomes a game of one-upsmanship with the imitation then.
Exactly. Okay. And then they never speak from here until WrestleMania. They just, each week they just go out and hold the belt.
Screw that, man. They got to have a mic battle. Screw that.
Now on the flip side of the Raw Elimination Chamber match, we have the SmackDown Elimination Chamber match.
That's, my excitement level is definitely not as high for this one.
God, this has just been an absolute, I hate to say it, but just shit show. I mean, what is going on with this match?
So this match, I mean, it's going to have Daniel Bryan, who's your champion. He's going to be taking on Wade Barrett and Cody Rhodes, The Big Show, Santino Marella now, and of course our favorite, The Great Khali.
Mm-hmm.
Now, originally, Corey, Mark Henry was in this match until he was suspended indefinitely by Teddy Long for threatening him or something like that. But, I mean, it's just... essentially, Mark Henry needs time off to kind of heal up his injuries that have been bugging him, right?
And Great Khali took his spot.
And then recently, just what's the word I'm looking for?
This week on SmackDown?
Or? Yeah, or no, like a recent happening, I guess.
Okay.
Randy Orton was actually originally supposed to be in this match, but he just suffered a concussion, apparently, on this week's Raw in his match against The Big Show. So he's actually been taken out of the match, and he's been replaced. This is actually a SmackDown spoiler if you haven't seen SmackDown yet. He's going to be replaced by Santino Marella.
Wow. I don't even know what to say about this match. I wasn't excited in the first place, and now that you've thrown Khali and Santino into it, God, I'm not excited.
So who do you think is going to win?
Well, I mean, unless it's Big Show, which I don't think it is, because apparently Big Show is going to be feuding with Shaq at WrestleMania.
That's not confirmed.
No, it's not. But really, to me, the only option would be Daniel Bryan. That's it. But I don't think they're going to have him be champion heading into WrestleMania. That being said, the wild card would be Wade Barrett. Are they going to throw the World Heavyweight Championship on Wade Barrett?
You know, I gotta totally agree with you there. Wade Barrett and Daniel Bryan are the only two guys I can really see coming out of this match as the winners. I mean, you're not going to put the belt on Cody Rhodes. He's already the IC title holder. Mm-hmm. And I really don't see them putting two belts on a guy.
No. They could, but I don't.
They could, but I really, really don't see that.
No. Especially when he's got no heat going with anyone.
Exactly.
At this point.
And heading into WrestleMania, I just don't see that happening. Number two, the Big Show, I really can't see them putting the strap on the Big Show at this point. Mm-hmm. Because, like you said, there's a possibility of a big celebrity matchup happening going into WrestleMania. Plus, I don't think the Big Show is title material at this point.
No, he's not. He's not.
You know, he's an enhancement talent at this point. You know, he's there to make other guys look good.
I agree.
Right? And Santino Marella, that's just, you know, Santino and Great Khali. That's just givens. You're not going to put the title on those guys.
Stranger things have happened.
I mean, Santino's your comedy relief, and the Great Khali just couldn't rustle his way out of a wet paper bag, to be honest.
All right, so the big question is it going to be Barrett or Daniel Bryan?
I think it's going to be Daniel Bryan. I think this is going to be the first Elimination Chamber pay-per-view where you're going to see both champions walk out of their matches with the belt still.
So no title change at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view.
That's what I am calling.
All right. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's... is that disappointing to the fans there if that doesn't happen? I mean, I guess not. Typically on a pay-per-view, you have one title change, at least.
Not necessarily.
No, but typically you want it. You try to have one. I mean, or they try to have one, I should say. Mm. I know there have been instances where they haven't, but... I mean, I don't know. It's a glorified house show if nothing really happens.
Why not keep the belt on Daniel Bryan? Adam, give him a little bit of credibility.
There's no attraction to Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. Oh, when he walks out, when he walks out of the entranceway at WrestleMania with the belt,
are you kidding me? People, the heat he's getting with his new kind of heel persona that he's going.
That's not WrestleMania worthy to me.
I disagree. I disagree with you, man.
Really?
Yeah. That's all I'm gonna say is
all right. Well, I don't really want to spend any more time with this because I think this match has been thrown together. I think it's terrible. Whatever. Let it happen. We'll see what happens from there. I mean, the only impact that this match could have is who Sheamus faces at WrestleMania.
Honestly the only thing that we're really going to see come out of this.
And even if they go that route, I'm going to be disappointed because he shouldn't be going for the SmackDown title anyways. He should be going for the WWE title, but whatever. We'll figure it out. Now, there is one more important match at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. Well... important, I guess, if you're feeling this storyline, which I definitely am not.
Holy God, no.
And that would be John Cena in an ambulance match with Kane.
I also gave the board of directors a suggestion for one of the main events at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view.
Well, what is it, Big Johnny?
John Cena versus Kane, one-on-one, in an ambulance match.
Actually, it's a pretty good idea. Who gave it to you? I know you didn't think it up. Hey, is there an ambulance here tonight?
Yeah, I believe so, right out there. I
think it's got one of those little machines in it that, you know, the beep, beep, beep tells you when stuff's alive. When stuff dies, it goes beep, flatlines. Maybe we could hook your career up to it, see how long it lasts.
You're always joking around, Henry. This week, last week. Come on, quit kidding around.
Yeah, it's funny. Maybe we could hook you up to it and see if I don't flatline you right now if you don't get out of my office.
Now, Triple H thinks that this match is a good idea. If he is taking over the company and he thinks that an ambulance match is a really good idea from John Laurinaitis, we are in for a big shock when he actually takes over. So,
no creative told Triple H to tell everybody that he thinks it's a good idea.
Now, I had said on previous shows that I thought this storyline was decent because it's written for kids, and if you put yourself in the shoes of a kid, you probably are quite excited about this match. But what I saw on Monday to accelerate this program just reversed my decision. I think that this is absolutely terrible. I think we are seeing acting at its worst, and I cannot believe that John Cena is just exploiting himself like this to show how bad he actually is at acting. And Zack Ryder, terrible. Get him down to mid-card immediately.
Worst program of 2012 by far.
I don't like this. The only thing I liked about what I saw on Monday in regards to this program was the shirt that Eve Torres was wearing. Other than that, I don't like it.
You're feeling Eve Torres, eh?
I was quite jealous of John Cena, actually, when she jumped under the ambulance. But here's the thing that really bugged me about that whole segment was, did you see, like, Eve Torres was, she was trapped in the ambulance. But did you see when they cut backstage, she got into the ambulance willingly? Did you miss that part?
I did, actually.
I think they might have cut that part out on the 9 o'clock p.m. show of Raw.
Or, oh, the non-live one?
Yeah, you know how they do two shows on the Raw. I think on the early, because I recorded the earlier episode, and they, Cena's doing his thing with Josh Matthews, mm-hmm. and you hear Eve Torres screaming, and then they cut to Torres, who just walks into the ambulance.
I totally missed that.
I think they cut it out. I think they edited it out in the second show. Huh. But yeah, she just walked in voluntarily, got into the ambulance, and then Kane walked up and shut the door on her, she was acting like she was trapped in the ambulance, but she got in. She walked into it. Like,
unreal.
Just these little screw-ups throughout this program have blown the whole thing for me.
Oh, I hated it from the beginning.
And
I've embraced the hate on this program for sure.
Nice. And the acting is so bad. And I think that this is doing way more damage to John Cena's career than the WWE realizes.
God, and he's going forward into one of the biggest matches, in my opinion, in WWE's history against The Rock.
And I think he's killing the heat for it.
Oh, jeez. He's looking so bad going into
this. It's almost like they're purposely doing this because they want the fans to really boo him at WrestleMania. Because I think they knew deep down that he's going to get booed anyways, and it's almost like they're just promoting that. They almost want you to hate him so much that you are going to just boo him out of the building, because no matter how good he was doing, he's going to get booed anyways, so let's just feed off that. Like, that's what I think they're doing in this situation, because it's terrible.
It feels like they're going to need a miracle to build John Cena up heading into WrestleMania now.
It should be obvious who wins this match at WrestleMania. Rock, because he is miles ahead of Cena, and this program is just proving it.
And he's
not
even on TV.
Mm.
I'm definitely not a fan of this program, but I mean, this whole program, it started at the end of last year when Kane returned with his mask, and the whole thing's basically been over John Cena's new t-shirt slogan, which is Rise Above Hate.
Yeah.
Right? So Kane's been trying to come out and make John Cena embrace the hate. Now, over the last 6 weeks, he's been playing a bunch of mind games with Cena. This has included him attacking Zack Ryder multiple times, like, you know, chokeslamming Ryder off the loading dock, which we both loved.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, through the floor, and then, you know, just recently on Raw, pushing the wheelchair off the side of the ramp. And then, of course, he's intimidating Eve time and time again. So he's kind of trying to, you know, play games with Cena. And, I mean, this whole thing's finally, hopefully we don't see any more of it. It's going to culminate this Sunday in the ambulance match, which the whole point of the match is to get your opponent thrown into the back of an ambulance and to shut both doors.
Now, there's two questions to me about this match. Number one, does the program end at the Elimination Chamber match?
Better.
And number two, does The Rock show up? I don't think The Rock shows up at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view.
I don't either.
I think he's been advertised to show up at the Raw the night after. But just end this, please. Just end it, because you are just killing John Cena here.
Yeah. No, you really are. I totally agree with you there. So you think we could see Zack Ryder come out maybe and cost Cena this match? Do you think Cena's going to win this match? I mean, the overwhelming favorite in this match is, of course, John Cena.
I would think that Cena somehow pulls the victory, yes. Is Zack Ryder going to be involved? Absolutely. I mean, he is going to be involved in some shape, for sure. But I don't think that Cena will lose, no. You can't have Cena lose the pay-per-view before you're going into the main event at WrestleMania.
See, I disagree. I think Kane's going to win this one.
Really?
I do.
You don't? Well, I mean, he's been very successful in the last couple of years. I mean, he's every big match Kane has been in, he's never really lost.
I think we're going to see Eve come out, and it's going to be revealed that Eve has been in cahoots with Kane the whole time.
Think so?
And that's going to eventually cost John Cena the match. So I think Kane's going
to
win this
match. I will pay $55 to see a makeout session with Eve and Kane.
Really?
If you sell me that, I'll buy the pay-per-view.
So you'll pay $55 to see Eve become the leader of the PG era?
Yeah. And he has to keep the mask on. You have to make out with Eve wearing the mask.
So does Kane impregnate Eve as well?
Okay, now you're just getting out of hand.
Well?
No, I mean, this is obviously going to end at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. I don't really care who wins or loses. Regardless, the damage has been done. I feel the entire program has been terrible. And I'm not looking forward to this at all, but just get it over with. Sound good?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, James, that pretty much is going to wrap up the tale of the tape. Now's a good time to remind everyone that if you want to send us an email, you can do so at onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. And if it's any good, we will put it on the air. You got anything to add to that?
Nope, not at all. Just send us your emails. Let us go. You let us know what we're doing.
That's it.
If it's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad. Do you like the Elimination Chamber? Do you not like the Elimination Chamber? Send us an email. Let us know. We'll put it on the air.
All right.
So
Elimination Chamber pay-per-view this Sunday. Obviously, me and James are so happy that it's here.
Woo!
That was just like a full half hour of hate.
Get it done. Hey, we embrace the hate.
We're definitely embracing the hate and promoting the hate in a public forum.
Just get it done.
Yeah. All right. Coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live, we're talking to the Bollywood Lions, recently renamed to the Bollywood Boys, Harv and Gurv Sira. They recently had a trip over to India. These are local Vancouver guys, James. They recently went over to India and they made their debut on the new promotion Ring Ka King, which I don't know if you've heard, but it's been extremely successful. We're lucky enough to talk to them tonight in our local wrestling scene.
Also later on tonight in our top five, we're going to be going down the top five best masked WWE wrestlers.
And our post-to-post report next.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
So you cry still, tears all in the pillowcase. Big girls all get a little taste, pushing me away so I give her space, feeling with a heart that I didn't break. I'll be there for you, I will care for you. I keep thinking you just don't know. Trying to run from that, say you're done with that. On your face, girl, it just don't show. When you're ready, just say you're ready. When all the baggage just ain't as heavy and the party's over, just don't forget me. We'll change the pace and we'll just go slow. You won't ever have to worry. You won't ever have to hide. And you've seen all my mistakes. So look me in my eyes. Cause if you let me, here's what I'll do. I'll take care of you. I've loved and I've lost.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the post-to-post report.
All right, the post-to-post report. Catching you up on the business of the business. Now, James, little road to WrestleMania update. You know, of course, you and I broadcasting live in Miami, WrestleMania weekend.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be so good. The sun, the beach, the whole wrestling atmosphere. It's just...
A way to rub it in everyone's faces.
You got it flaunted. That's what I've always heard.
Well, the good news is that all of our tickets have arrived. So we have WrestleMania tickets. We have Hall of Fame tickets. We have Monday Night Raw tickets.
It is happening.
We are set to go.
It is 100% happening.
Now, I'm just putting on some finishing touches on just exactly how we're bringing all the gear down to the border. And, you know, because you got to get all this radio equipment across the border. So that's really the next step.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, we're getting pretty close.
I'm excited, man. I'm really, really excited.
And the request for media credentials with the WWE has been put in by you and I as well. So we're waiting to hear back for that.
Wow, that'd make it even more amazing if we got that.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll have better news on that next week. So we start the post-to-post report this week, James, with a big announcement. As WWE confirmed this morning with a press conference that WrestleMania 29 will be held at New Jersey's MetLife Stadium on April 7th, 2013. John Cena, Triple H, Vince McMahon, and The Rock, among others, were on hand for the announcement. Now, home of the Super Bowl champs, the New York Giants, and also the New York Jets, MetLife Stadium will host the annual event. WrestleMania festivities, they'll take place in the New York and New Jersey area. Now, as a side note, I kind of looked this up earlier. The stadium is actually only about 20 minutes away from New York's Times Square and Madison Square Garden. So even though they're saying New Jersey, it's kind of a bit of, it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
And if you've seen the WrestleMania logo, which they've unveiled on the WWE.com website, it actually says NJ and NY underneath the WrestleMania logo.
Kind of
promoting the fact that it's in both areas. Now, this would mark WrestleMania's fifth trip to the metropolitan area, with past visits being in 1985, 86, 94, and 2004. At the press conference this morning, John Cena was quoted as saying, "I'm glad you don't have a roof on this building, because we would sure blow it off." One other item of note, The Rock confirming he will be at WrestleMania 29.
Oh, wow. It's going to be quite the event.
One issue I had with this press conference this morning was you had The Rock and John Cena together, wearing business suits, shaking hands with people, taking photos side by side with, you know, mayors or whoever. Don't do that.
It's really not like the old days anymore, eh? Where they would live their characters outside of the ring and really adhere to kayfabe. But not anymore.
It just screams that these guys are actually buddies outside the ring, and I don't want to see that. These guys should not be in the same building up until WrestleMania, unless it's inside the squared circle.
Well, I guess this pretty much guarantees that WrestleMania 30 will not be at Madison Square Garden.
No. And actually, Jim Ross has said that they won't have it in Dallas, as we've previously reported either, because apparently NCAA basketball is in the building during that time. So WrestleMania 30 is a big question mark at this point.
Huh. Well, WWE Studios and 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment have come to terms on a new deal that will release three straight-to-DVD titles, one being a new Marine installment. The Marine Homefront will be the third installment of this series, with John Cena and Ted DiBiase starring in the previous two. WWE Studios president Michael Luisi was quoted as saying, "WWE Studios will continue to expand its film offerings to appeal to a wide range of movie fans in 2012 and 2013, and we look forward to building our relationship with 20th Century Fox to present movies that bring action, adventure, and humor to audiences all over the globe." No word yet on the other two movie titles.
Again, wouldn't it just be hilarious if The Rock was in a WWE Studios film?
I don't think he'd touch it with a 10-foot pole.
And to me, that's what's funny about the whole thing. That's what's hilarious about it. He never will be in one. Why would you be? It's like a career killer, it seems.
Oh, I'm just chomping at the bit for a new Marine movie, I tell you.
Mm-hmm. Now, in a bit of TNA news this week... Ding dong, the witch is dead, the wicked witch. Vince Russo, out of work.
Yay!
TNA president Dixie Carter announced earlier this week that TNA and Vince Russo have mutually parted ways, and the separation is amicable and professional. Former WWE writer and former podcaster David Lagana has been brought on. It's unclear at this point whether he will assume a backstage producer role or have his hand in a creative role. Sources are saying that probably creative.
So I guess we'll start seeing some better, more creative storylines now coming out of TNA.
I don't know. I mean, the fact you're bringing in David Lagana, who has, he's been a writer before, he's from the WWE. I would just like to see someone brand new. Just start brand new with fresh ideas and let's see what happens. Obviously, you want, like any job, someone with experience. But I'm just saying, I'd like to see someone brand new and just really push for something innovative within TNA.
Maybe somebody young, eh?
Someone. I don't know. I don't know who the person is. David Lagana could be the guy. I've listened to his show before. He seems very knowledgeable about the industry. I'm just saying, I personally would like to see someone completely fresh in that role. But who am I?
Well, WWE crews were in Abu Dhabi last weekend and drew crowds between 5,000 and 6,000 people. The three-day tour grossed approximately $2 million, and because the WWE was in a richer region, ticket prices were apparently selling at $100 a seat on average. Now, being in a different country, crews were made aware of what to do and what not to do. Keep a low profile and don't get out of hand, basically. Now, due to their culture in Abu Dhabi, WWE did not bring their Titantron, any pyro, or any of the divas.
WWE superstar Mark Henry will be inducted into the inaugural class of the International Sports Hall of Fame. The ceremony will take place at the Arnold Sports Festival on March 3rd from Columbus, Ohio. Names joining Henry in the inaugural class include seven-time Mr. Olympia Arnold Schwarzenegger and MMA legend Randy Couture.
And finally, want to go to this year's WrestleMania? Or maybe you want to attempt to be the guy Eve Torres jumps out of an ambulance and kisses? Well, here's your shot. Mick Foley and Eve are hosting a WrestleMania raffle. Tickets are $2 each, and to support the charity Reign. If you want to know what it means, look it up. The grand prize winner will receive two tickets to WrestleMania 28, Monday Night Raw, and the Hall of Fame, an exclusive lunch with Eve Torres and three other surprise divas, and an exclusive breakfast with none other than Mick Foley himself. Also included is hotel and a travel allowance. Check out www.celebritiesforcharity.org for more details.
Now, in terms of WWE financials this week, the current WWE stock price, $9.73 a share, down 18 cents from our show 2 weeks ago. It's pretty much remained steady the past 2 weeks. Now, in terms of television ratings, the February 13th edition of Monday Night Raw scored a 2.99 rating. That's down 8% compared to a 3.25 rating last week. Raw was down 16% from 2 weeks ago, the night after the Royal Rumble, even though they advertised HBK Shawn Michaels to appear on the program. Raw averaged 4.12 million viewers, down 11% compared to last week, and down 21% 2 weeks prior.
Well, when you're putting out Raws like this Mondays,
no kidding.
What do you expect?
Now, Raw's first hour averaged 3.92 million viewers, but then increased to an average of 4.31 million viewers in the second hour.
Oh, wow.
This marks the first time in 2012 and only the second time in the past 16 weeks that Monday Night Raw's second hour has trumped the first hour in terms of viewership numbers.
That really blows my mind.
Yeah?
That the second hour did better than the first? The second hour was a lot worse this Monday, I thought so anyways.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just... I don't really know if there's any sort of growing trend with that. Like, do people actually tune out after the first hour if it's terrible because they don't care about the second? Or is this just a simple case of another TV show being on? Or
I think it's just another TV show being on, to be honest.
Think so?
Yeah, something else that comes on at the 7 o'clock our time hour anyways.
Mm-hmm. But, all right. Post-to-post report. There you go. You're all caught up with the business of the business, James.
I like being caught up. So did you notice, Corey, that Evan Bourne, he was kind of, he's been taken off the Raw opening, what do you call it?
The signature,
thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. So maybe he's not coming back.
What do you think?
I mean, like, I don't know what's to do with Evan Bourne.
Do you think he's pretty much done?
I think he's pretty much done. And now Tamina, she's taking the last name of Snuka now, and she's going to be in a match against Beth Phoenix. The pay-per-view this Sunday.
Well, so. I think they should have been running with the Tamina, you know, the Tamina Snuka. Well, she's using the last name Snuka, right?
So she's, she's playing off the name of her father, obviously. And
they should have been doing that from the beginning.
Me too. I mean, I don't know why it's taken this long to put her together with Beth Phoenix in a feud, you know?
It's interesting.
So.
Well, we'll see how that goes. She's facing Beth Phoenix at the Elimination Chamber this Sunday.
So do you think Beth Phoenix or Tamina's going to take it?
I think Beth Phoenix heads into WrestleMania with the belt. I think she deserves it, so.
I do, too. I think it's going to be Beth Phoenix and Karma at WrestleMania, personally.
All right. We got to take another little break. But coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live, in our local wrestling scene, we're talking to the Bollywood boys, Harvin Gurf Sira.
Oh, it's going
to
be good.
We had a chance to talk to him earlier today.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live. We'll be right back.
the local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
Sorry, I just love that 80s hair metal music.
It's the greatest. I'm telling you, the 80s was the best era of music ever.
This song actually is quite funny how we found it. We literally found that song completely random.
And we've flown with it ever since. It's beautiful.
It is. It is the best music to intro the local wrestling scene.
Because I totally agree.
It's just got that feel to it, doesn't it?
It does.
Regardless, this is the local wrestling scene. We're catching you up with the latest in the Pacific Northwest. And James, we've had a bit of a groundbreaking movement in the Pacific Northwest recently, because we have a tag team here in Vancouver that recently went over to India, of all places.
Wow.
And had a bit of a stint, with TNA and their new startup promotion over there. It's called Ring Ka-King. We're talking about Herve and Garv Sira, known to us as the Bollywood Lions, but they actually are going as the Bollywood Boys over in India.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Now, just before we get into the interview, what is your take on the Bollywood Lions from what you've seen?
Oh, these guys are fantastic. And they get, I mean, for a heel tag team, you should see the amount of positive reaction that they get at ECCW shows. And I mean, for great reason. These guys are two fantastic competitors, and they're probably one of the best, if not the best, tag team in the Lower Mainland at the moment. So,
and you know, in your opinion, do they have what it takes to get to the top?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Oh, I think so.
I agree as well.
I mean, they're a couple of young guys right now. They just probably just need a little bit more seasoning, a little bit more experience, and I know that
they're also big Vancouver Canuck fans, which I know you are as well.
Oh, right on. I like them already.
There you go.
I like them already.
All right. Well, let's not waste any time. It's a bit of a long interview, but it's very well. It's one worth listening to. So I want to jump right into it. I had a chance to speak with the Bollywood Lions earlier today. Here is Herve and Garv Sira. All right. I am on the line right now with the Bollywood Boys, better known to the Vancouver community as the Bollywood Lions, but Herve and Garv Sira. Herve and Garv, are you there, and how you doing?
Yes, we are. Here we are, buddy.
All right.
So thanks for having us, brother.
Yeah, no worries. It's excellent to talk to you guys. I know that you've had a lot of big things go on in your life in the last little bit, and we're going to get to that. And I know that your fan base has been increasing immensely in the last few weeks. But before we get to that, you are really well known to the Vancouver community as being the Bollywood Lions, a successful tag team wrestling for ECCW.
Yeah.
Just to let everyone know, how did you guys get started in the business, and where did this tag team come from? I mean, how long have you been going? Where did you train? Just give us an update on how this whole thing got started.
All right. Well, here's Gerb, and I'll start off here. And pretty much, just like anybody else, you go to wrestling school. So I sent a letter to the Hart family in 2003 and got a reply back, and was told to come down, you know, after paying X amount of money, to come down and train with Bruce Hart and the infamous Hart family dungeon. I spent just over 2 months down there in Calgary. This was just before they sold the house, so my time down there was just very short, but, you know, obviously it was an honor and privilege just to be down there training with Bruce Hart and learning down in that basement.
So were you actually training in the dungeon?
Correct, yes. Yeah, I got my start out there in Calgary. And right after that, came back home here in BC and went to school. And after that, ECCW started up Main Pain Asylum down in Surrey. And we got started out there. And I actually started, I believe, maybe a month or two just before Herve did. And this was early 2005. And after that, you know,
Our classes just merged.
Yeah, we just started training together. And everybody pretty much that you see on today's ECCW active roster, from El Phantasmo, Sid Salom, obviously Kyle O'Reilly, has gone on to Ring of Honor, ourselves, and Veronica Weiss, Lindsay, Nicole Matthews. We all started out together, and here we are, 5-6 years later, still doing our thing.
And so,
yeah, no, it was,
go ahead,
pretty
sorry.
Phenomenal. So, yeah, no, I was going to say, like, that class, like, guys, all the guys that Gerb just mentioned, I mean, it's phenomenal how much talent came out of those two, because we just kind of merged all of us, and we had the best training, the best group of guys you could ever possibly imagine. You know, you think of
how many training schools around the world, but just that group of core guys, they're all talented, you know. Everybody has the potential to do something big, right?
So how long were you guys in Calgary for training, and then how long were you guys training in Vancouver?
It was just Gerb. Yeah, trained in the dungeon. I wanted to go train down there too, but they sold the house. So, you know what, it's pretty cool. At least one of us did it, just to have that legacy somehow attached to our name with Gerb going down to the dungeon. But Gerb was there. Yeah, I was just there from the like I said, 2 months, which is in the summer of 2004. So this is from like June to maybe first week of
September.
August. Yeah, something like that. So yeah, I was back in town, and Harv and I started out together, and we got in touch with Michelle Starr. You know, Scotty Mack was training us. We got Vance Nevada training us, and you know,
we had a lot of good hands out there. Yeah.
So like Harv mentioned, you know, that class was just so talented. Everybody had something special to offer, and obviously everyone's doing really well for themselves. So it's just great to know that, you know, out of everybody, everyone came out, you know, with something.
So you guys have been wrestling with ECCW since, obviously, and just how have you enjoyed your time wrestling there, and what are some of your favorite moments wrestling for ECCW?
Well, I think with Gerb and I, one of the big things where we traveled across Canada, that was one of our big things that, you know, we took a lot of pride in initially, because we went from the Pacific Coast to the Atlantic Ocean type of deal, you know, and everywhere in between. And then, you know, the experience of that alone, you know, working with guys in Winnipeg and Nova Scotia and Newfoundland and, you know, up north in Ontario, then doing the Tony Condello Hell Tour, the ones that Edge and Christian used to talk about. And I remember that was one thing that as soon as we got out of training school, we wanted to do those. You know what I mean? So that was the first thing you wanted to do, was the Northern Death Tours, because you heard about it as kids, you know, you watch guys on the television talking about it, Canadian guys like Edge and Christian, and you're like, that's what I want to do. And that was one of the first things that, you know, we really took pride
in. Yeah, it was a great badge of honor just to kind of, you know, be attached to that.
And is it everything? Is it everything they say it is?
Oh, man, it's everything and then some. You know, like, it's just like, it's the drive from BC to Winnipeg, and then getting to Winnipeg, and then driving up north 12, 24 hours, whatever it was, and then surviving on canned tuna, craft dinner for 3 weeks, sleeping on gym mats and gymnasiums. And, you know, it's just a great way for all the boys to come together, ribbing each other, and, you know, all this.
I think you really find out if you have passion for the
business. Yeah, it's like, it's just a badge of honor just to say you did it. Like, you know, Harv was saying, guys like Edge, Christian, they did it, and, you know, they talk about it to this day. And just to say you did it, and to be, you know, it's a great way for young guys coming out to just get that ring time as well. You know, it's like you set up the ring, you tear it down, you do it all over again, and you're driving over frozen lakes for up to like 2 hours. And just,
so when you guys went on that tour, who was doing the tour with you?
We had the first year we went out, because we did it twice. The first year was
the ECCW boys.
It was pretty much all the ECCW boys. We had Scotty Mack, Sid Sylum, Vance was in charge, myself, Harv. We had like a core group of pretty much from ECCW out there.
A couple of the ECCW
boys. Yeah, Cremator was out there. Yeah. And then the next year, some of the Alberta boys, you know, we had Kyle Sebastian, T-Bone, some of the other guys from Alberta. So it was just great to do it twice and come out, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, we had some damn near crazy moments where you thought you're never gonna come out alive. Like, you know, literally, you're like, you know, we're stuck here in the middle of nowhere, and how are we gonna get out of here?
I remember doing a 360 spin and falling into a snowbank.
Yeah, just so many near calls, man. Like,
yeah,
it's just crazy. But you know, you look back, you're like, man, I can't believe I did that. But you know what? I'm proud I did that
one day.
I think no one on the outside looking in really understands probably just how hellish that tour is.
In retrospect, looking back now with all the stuff that's happening with us this year, with obviously Ring for King and all that, just to say you worked for Tony Condello, you know, worked for a big name promoter in Canada who's worked with pretty much everybody. And, you know, just to learn from him and sit there and hear his stories, you don't realize how important that is. You know, the in-ring work is great, but to sit in a hotel room with Tony Condello, who's talking about stuff from the 60s and 70s, you don't get that too often nowadays, you know, because obviously as we're getting older, you know, you look at guys who are retiring and who are the new guys coming in. You know, a lot of the guys from the 60s are, you know, really past their, you know, prime, and you're not going to be working with them or whatever. But to sit in a, you know, hotel room or in a truck for 72 hours and,
you're talking to Tony Candela about Rowdy Piper and Edge and all the crazy NWA stuff. You don't get that. And that's the stuff when you start working, you know, with other big name guys, what we're doing now, you know, you realize how important it is to have that. It's an education, you know, to have that education with Tony Candela and be able to share his stories with guys who are connected with them. And that's, you know, it's all very important to travel in this business.
Like, your family and your friends think you're crazy doing it when you tell them what you did, and they just give you back that, oh yeah, that's cool, but nobody really gets it until you actually do it. And to get it, you need to have passion and you have to have love for this business, which is why we did it. And you know, obviously my brother and I, we love this business, we grew up watching this business, and this business means everything to us. And it's just like, you know, you carry that with you for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And whether you make it or not, and wherever you go, you always will talk about this. Hey, you know what, 10, 20, 30 years from now, you'll be like, I did that way back when, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's something to, like, have with you and carry with you, take pride in. And no matter where you go, you always have it with you.
Now, you had mentioned talking with legends. Who are some of the legends that you have met along the way? And what do they say about you guys when they actually see you in the ring? Or, you know, do they give you constructive criticism and do they let you know what you need to work on? And
yeah,
maybe if you could fill us in on what
person,
that is.
It was Honky Tonk Man, who we really... He was the first guy. I remember I did an up north tour to Prince George. We did this fair show, and I remember Honky was on that. And that was, like, you know, first time you're like, oh, my God, it's a Honky Tonk Man. You know what I mean? You grew up watching him. And he was the first guy, you know, you really start getting influenced by what he says, and you're trying to listen to everything he's saying. And I remember I got the opportunity to work him. I was like, 19. And it doesn't mean anything as far as wrestling goes, but to be in the ring with him, you know, and just, you know, hear him and, you know, learn from him and see how he moves or whatever, you know, small stuff. At 19, you're not going to make it anywhere, but just to be in that ring with him, you know, you learn so much. And then I think we met Bret Hart in Las Vegas at the Cauliflower Alley
Club. Yeah, we spent a lot of time at the Cauliflower Alley Club, you know, in 2007 and 8, and I've been down there a couple of times. And, you know, just listening to the vets talk and talking about, you know, giving us good feedback and just, you know, giving us advice on how to survive and how to make it. Because obviously the business has changed from the vets you talk to at Cauliflower Rally Club to what it is now. And, you know, through the Cauliflower Rally Club, we were, you know, fortunate enough to meet Harley Race, who, you know, told us about his camp that happened. And we went down there a couple of times in 07 and 08. And, you know, obviously that was the big eye-opener for both of us. Like yeah. Wow, we have so much to learn. Because Harley's camp, you know, Harley Race's camp down in Eldon, Missouri, just breaks it down to the very basic. And you learn from him, you learn from his trainer, Trevor Murdoch, with a great hand in teaching us. You do his drills. And it's just, you know, you're obviously excited to get down there and learn. And you bring that knowledge and education back with you. And, you know, you use that in your matches here, whether it's locally in Vancouver or somewhere in the Maritimes. It doesn't matter where it is. You use that knowledge, and it's right there. Those camps that you do are pretty much, you know, the education. Like Harv was mentioning, you know, talking to Tony is an education. Going to Harley's camp is an education. It's all about learning, because obviously, you know, the days of working 7 days a week are pretty much gone. But if you can make the most out of going to camps and, you know, shelling out that money if you have it to go learn and go educate yourself and bring it back, it's just, you know, it's all about learning, and also connect, you know, networking and knowing the people that you meet in camps.
I think, like, specifically for the Harley Race camp, as Gerard was talking about, it's a good way to put yourself on the world wrestling stage and see where you fit in. You know what I mean? Because if you stay in one place for a long time, you kind of get comfortable. When you go to Eldon, Missouri, and there's guys from, you know, Japan and all over America and Canada and whatever, UK, coming in, and you're like, oh, shit, there's a lot more talent out there. You know, I mean, it's a good way to open your eyes and be like, okay, this is where I rank on a global scale of pro wrestling.
And Harv makes a good point there, because being smaller guys and not the biggest guys on the scene, you see that and you're like, okay, wow, okay, there are much bigger guys out there, bigger workers than us. So what are we going to do to stand out? You know what I'm saying? What are we going to do to challenge ourselves to make ourselves look just as big in a different sort of way? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a challenge, and, you know, it was a good challenge, not a bad challenge.
Which paid off. I mean,
it was an eye-opener. So hence your question from, you know, earlier, like, how did the Bollywood Lions come together, the Bollywood Boys? And that's how it was. You know, we were like, okay, what do we have that's something we can offer? You know, we speak a second language. You know, we're Indian, and, you know, Bollywood, the film industry in India is huge, right? So why not just be who you are, but crank it up a notch, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, use your heritage or your culture and your Indian background to your advantage. And, you know, hence the Bollywood Lions. You know, we come out, we do the dance, and we do the whole, like, shebang with the, you know, Punjabi music and whatnot. So it kind of, it all just came together from there, because Harv and I were like, you know what, we're brothers. There aren't many legit brother tag teams left out there. Why not use that to our advantage? Mm-hmm. You know, be the Bollywood Lions, pretty much, you know, who are cocky heels out here in Vancouver, and use that to our ability.
Well, you guys definitely have...
Harv was the mastermind behind it. I guess, you know, he really got the idea behind it, and, you know, I'm sure he's got a lot more to say about it.
No, I was just going to ask if I could, you know, obviously you're doing something right, because someone has taken notice to you guys, because, you know, recently you were over in India working for a new startup promotion, Ring Ka King. How did that all come about? Just who made that phone call to you, and just, you know, how did that whole thing get started? Because that is a huge thing for you two.
Yeah, no, you know, we had been sending out our work and packaged out to TNA for a while, and out of nowhere, just stepping out of the gym one day, I get a call from the TNA office. It was Jeff Jarrett, and you know, he...
That's got to be crazy to get that phone call.
It was really, it was Jeff who... Yeah, he really, you know, he saw our work. He went to bat for us, you know, online and saw the videos and the whole gimmick, and pretty much laid the foundation for us, and told us what he was, you know, what they were working on, the project, and, you know, asked us if we were on board, and on board, I mean, we were more than on board. Like, I mean, just to get that call was just like, it was like, wow, it was like, you know, almost like all these years of hard work kind of paid off.
Yeah, it's just with that, you know, you don't know where you're going to head 10 years from now, but just to get that call.
So
like, I mean, what we always heard from day one from all the workers is you always need that one guy who's in a position of power who believes in you. And for us, that was Jeff Jarrett. You know, he believed in our work. And I think it was a very old school way of getting work, is you send in your tapes and the guy, you know, believes in your work, and you reassure him that, you know, you'll do well. I mean, it's pretty phenomenal to, you know, get that call. Now,
you can't really put it in words. I mean, to get that call, to get the opportunity, it's just like, man, you work so hard just to get this opportunity, get this big break. And, you know, we're like, me and Harv told ourselves, we're like, you know what, we're going to have to kick the door down and, you know, bust through that son of a bitch. You know what I'm saying? Like, really, like, you know, prove ourselves. And, you know, going into Ring Ka King, if you look at the roster, we're the only two named guys on there that hadn't had a contract before, like no WWE exposure, no TNA exposure. So we really had to go out there and prove ourselves, and we really wanted to do that. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, that's what we've done, and, you know, only time will tell where it goes from here. But just to get that call, get the opportunity, and to go out there and make the most of this opportunity, you know, it's, you work your entire life, your entire career for this, and we're so blessed and so honored to have had this opportunity, because, you know, not, you know, it doesn't always come by, you know.
I remember Bret Hart saying once, it's like, you know, every wrestler around the world waits for his big break, and I think every wrestler believes he'll get his big break, but
so who
because
was
the economics of the wrestling business, you don't know if you'll ever get that, but just to have the opportunity is pretty sweet.
So when you did get the call from Jeff Jarrett, who was the first person you each told?
Oh, parents. Oh, yeah, parents. Well, I have to be, yeah, you know, they're the biggest supporters you can ever have.
And I told my wife, you know, she's been my, you know, number one supporter from the very
excellent
get-go.
Well, I'm very happy for you guys. You're living the dream that most of us, you know, dreamt about when we were kids.
So. Well, you know what? I mean, there's a lot of work that's still left to be done. I
yeah,
mean, this
absolutely.
Is just, this is just a break, and I don't want, you know, anybody to think this is it. I mean, for us, now we've got the opportunity. We had a break. You know, we're hoping to make the most of it. And the hard work really starts now, you know, to go from here on forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the hard work of, you know, getting better and, you know, still, you know, honing your craft and perfecting it. So the hard work, we believe, starts now. And, you know, I'm going to have to keep on doing what we're doing.
Now, how was your trip to India? Like, without getting into specifics about Ring Ka King, is India like a really untapped wrestling market, and is it really alive and well over there? Just how gauge your general reaction to India and professional wrestling?
I think, yeah, no, you pretty much. It's an untapped market with a lot of potential. Obviously, there have been big stars, you know, who have been wrestling, you know, like obviously Kali or Tiger Jeet Singh. I mean, you look at Tiger Jeet Singh, he never really wrestled in a big American company, but, you know, he's a huge name out internationally. So it is a untapped market. And so for, you know, TNA to go in there with this Rinka King product, which is pretty much a brand extension kind of in many ways, right? So as Indian wrestlers. Sorry?
I was just going to ask. This Rinka King is backed by TNA. So this is sort of an international
project.
Yeah,
it's backed by Endemol, which is it's a production company out in India. So it's part them and part them. And it's basically Jeff Jarrett's baby, though.
Yeah.
You know, it's all him and Dutch Mantel. Yeah, anyways, I thought that, you know, wrestling was dead in India.
Oh, yeah.
Pick up this. I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, I think we were talking about earlier how, you know, like the first episode drew 14 to 20 million viewers, which is phenomenal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even be watched by that many. And then you wonder how many people are just watching this over on YouTube around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty phenomenal the amount of messages we're getting on either Twitter or Facebook. And it's like, people, like, it's pretty cool to start getting messages from people like from Berlin, Germany, you know, and I think people are just excited to see a new, you know, wrestling organization out there, you know, and with North American and Indian talent. So
before I get into Rinka King, I wanted to ask, is there, you know, is there a history with professional wrestling in India? Like, are there indie feds active today and have they been around for a long time?
I don't know. There is. I know. I can't. No, if there have been, I mean, we haven't heard of any.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. If there is that. Yeah.
No worries. Sure. So how did you, Rinka King, was it, you know, I was very impressed with the production value, and you had mentioned that it's a production company is working behind the scenes as well. Like, were you blown away? I mean, is it?
Yeah, no, you walk in. I remember the first day we walked in, our jaws just dropped, and I'm not even exaggerating. We were like, wow. It's like, you know, you don't expect it. You know, I think like 2 weeks before we were in Cloverdale, and then to go from there to this huge venue with the, you know, big Titantron, and they're going over the pyrotechnics and lights everywhere.
The glitz, the glamour. I mean,
it's everything.
The lights. It truly is a huge production. Until you see it in person, I mean, words can't express just how big the whole setup is.
And I think that was the first time, like, I think it didn't hit us when we were on the plane, the 26-hour plane ride to India didn't set it in until we walked into the venue and we're like, oh my gosh, now it's time to, you know, live up to all this, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You got the big break, now it's time to deliver because this is big, you know.
Now, the night of your initial debut on one of their episodes, the first time we saw you on Rinka King, what was the next 48 hours like after that? Was your fan base growing rapidly? I mean, were you had mentioned you were getting Twitters and Facebooks from people. Like, was it just crazy how fast it grew for you guys?
Yeah, initially it was just a fan response locally. I mean, since it's been airing, I mean, I think our Twitter account's grown by 300 people in the last 4 weeks, which is, you know, you think it's only been 2 weeks since the Rinka King's been airing, and it's like, we've just rapidly, people are starting to talk about us. But like, yeah, initially there, we were just like, I remember one night we had a media day, and it's like, all the wrestlers were getting on the bus to go back to the hotel, and there was kids everywhere. They were just everywhere trying to take pictures of us, you know, grabbing our bags, grabbing our shirts. And again, for guys coming from Vancouver, BC, Canada, never experienced this. We're like, wow, you know, if this is as high as we're ever going to go, this is pretty phenomenal, and this is more than enough, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the greatest thing about this is honestly like the positive feedback we're getting from all the workers across Canada and like, you know, North America and pretty much everyone that we know. It's just amazing to have the respect of your peers and all your peers wishing you well and, you know, rooting for you. That's, I think, more meaningful and, you know, means a lot just to have, like I said, you know, having your fellow workers and wrestlers, peers,
mm-hmm.
saying, hey, you know what, you guys are doing a tremendous job, really happy for you, you know, you guys deserve the break. That means a lot, and that motivates you to kind of go out there and really, you know, kick ass and come back and, you know, have everybody proud and be happy for you, because like Harv was saying, we're just, you know, we were two young kids at the age of 18 with this crazy dream of making it, and, you know, people thinking we're silly or not big enough or, you know,
on the verge of it,
you know, not having what it takes, but you know, it comes back to the old adage, you know, if you truly believe in
yourself and you work hard enough, something can give. And that's been, for me personally, that's been the best thing, is to have the positive feedback from all your peers and your family.
I think we were really lucky to have a lot of the boys over there in India, the ones we worked with, just the crew and all that. They really helped us, because those guys are used to, television.
That's a big thing between indie wrestling and television wrestling, that the transition. That was the big transition for us,
We go from working in a gymnasium
to TV wrestling. It's totally different. You realize wrestling's different on the big leagues, why it's different, and the small things.
There's a whole really other element of the business that is probably yet to learn, right?
Exactly. You hit it right on the nail. It's like, it's a totally different ball game. It's not what we do. It's nothing what we do locally. It's a totally different ball game. Mm-hmm. You see the way, from 9 in the morning to 11 in the evening, how things are run, and it's totally different. It's a big rock concert, man. You hear that adage, it is. It's like it's cameras and different angles and the entrances and the pyrotechnics, and oh my God, it's not just a wrestling show. And you really start to understand that and grasp that. You start to understand what promoters, especially in the big, big times, what they want and why it is they have certain guys on the roster. And that's what it is. A lot of the guys helped us, guys like Dutch Mantel, who really, they understood when new guys coming in. They really took the time to, explain things to us. And Rudy Charles, the referee, I love that guy, and he really helped us.
Yeah, everybody,
you don't appreciate stuff like that until you really grasp it, everybody really helped you out.
Chavo Guerrero, another name that, we can sit here and talk about. He really, just from the moment we would see him at 9 a.m. in the morning having breakfast to, until the show starts, we just pick his brain, you make the most of this opportunity, it's just not about the in-ring stuff, it's more about, everything. So, you talk to a guy like Chavo Guerrero, talk to, Jeff Jarrett, you talk to, everybody that's on that roster, and you pick their brains, you talk to them, you learn as much as possible from everything.
And you guys were over there for how long, 10 days, or?
We had two taping schedules. We did initially one in December, then we went back in January.
Yeah, the one in December was, I believe, a week long, and then the most recent one was just over 10 days.
Okay.
And that's all season one. So.
But you're back in Vancouver now, and you have an even bigger show, maybe. It depends how you look at it, coming up. ECCW's Pacific Cup.
Absolutely.
Now, are any of you taking part in that? And who are you picking for the Pacific Cup this year? How about that?
Well, since my brother's in it, Gerv, I'm going to go with Gerv.
Yeah, you have it, man.
He's got all the momentum in the
world. It all starts next Friday,
I thought I was going to start the split, the heel turn for one of you guys there. I thought.
It starts right here.
Okay.
24th and 25th. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so Gerv is in the Pacific Cup, and who are you taking on in the first round?
I'll be taking on Revenus Randy Myers.
This
will be our, I believe, first singles match, and I'm really looking forward to it. Obviously, Randy's great at what he does, and it's going to be a great challenge for me to up my game. And, singles match with Revenus Randy should be one hell of a match, and look really, really looking forward to it, man.
And if anyone wants to check that out, www.eccw.com for tickets, and that's going to be in Surrey, British Columbia. Now, we got to get going, unfortunately. We're running out of time. But there's one more question that I wanted to ask you, and the reason I'm going to ask you this question is because I think 10 years from now, I'm going to come back, listen to this episode of Smack Talk Radio Live, and just see where we're at. I want to ask you boys, what is the ultimate goal for the Bollywood Lions, or the Bollywood Boys, depending on who you're talking about?
You know what? I would just say, to be on a nationally televised wrestling show and make money for the rest of your life doing this, which honestly, I say we can be doing fairly soon.
We really want to, take this tag team to a whole new level and, bring back pretty much tag team wrestling.
I think we're on the verge of doing this. So
that's the ultimate goal, is to be the best tag team that we can possibly be.
You can hear this interview in 10 years and you'll be like, yeah, they were right.
That's exactly why I asked this question, because I have a feeling that you guys are going to be right. And,
Thank you so much, brother.
All right, well, congratulations to both of you. Everyone in Vancouver is rooting for you. I know that for sure. And we're all excited for you. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us, man. No worries. Thank you very much.
Well, there you have it. Gerv and Harv Sira. What a fantastic experience these guys must have had. And I mean, couldn't have happened to two greater guys, in my opinion. And like they were mentioning there at the end of the interview, ECCW's having their big Pacific Cup tournament at the end of this month. On the Friday, it will be in Surrey at Bridgeview Hall. Gerv will be taking on, like you said, Ravenous Randy Myers. And then the next night, the semifinals and the finals of the tournament are going to be taking place at the Russian Community Center out in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. It was an excellent interview, I thought. I was very fortunate.
What an experience.
Oh, for sure. They're living the dream.
They're
living the dream that I had when I was a kid anyway, so I'm quite jealous.
It couldn't have happened to two nicer guys, honestly. No.
Now, one thing I wanted to get in before we hit the top five, we're going to take a break before we hit the top five, but I want to let you know, the Bollywood Boys, they're on Facebook. If you are interested in signing up for their page, look up the Bollywood Boys on Facebook. And as well, they're on Twitter at Bollywood Boys. At Bollywood Boys. There you go.
There you go. And if you want to find out a little bit more about the Pacific Cup, what it's all about, of course, ECCW has their website, www.eccw.com.
Thank you very much to the Sierra Brothers. Now, coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live,
we've got tonight's top five. We're going to be going down the top five best masked WWE wrestlers.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. Helping you remember what most of us couldn't. Tonight's top five.
All right, everybody, welcome back. This is Smack Talk Radio Live you're listening to, and we are into our top five. Tonight, our top five, Corey, top five best masked WWE wrestlers.
This is obviously because Kane is on such a roll as of late.
Oh, of course. So let's kick it off with number five, and that's the Hurricane. Now, with a gimmick that could easily be considered laughable, and in many ways was, longtime comic book fan Gregory Shane Helms made the Hurricane gimmick his own, as he got a significant amount of career mileage from his Green Lantern-inspired mass superhero persona. Now, Helms' run as the Hurricane saw him feud with the likes of Ric Flair when he was with Evolution, and The Rock when he came back as a heel to feud Stone Cold Steve Austin before WrestleMania 19. Helms would then drop the superhero gimmick in 2005, and he'd go on to win the WWE Cruiserweight Championship and hold on to it for 385 days, becoming the longest reigning Cruiserweight Champion in history and the longest reigning champion in SmackDown history. Now, Helms received another run as the Hurricane as recently as 2010, but however, this incarnation was cut short when an incident outside the ring unfortunately led to Helms' release from the company.
This brings us to number four, the Big Van Vader. Leon Allen White, better known as Big Van Vader, arguably one of the greatest super heavyweights to compete in pro wrestling, who's never won a title in the WWE.
Tragic.
His athletic prowess as a 300-pounder made him one of the most imposing forces in both a host of national and international wrestling promotions. A product of the American Wrestling Association, White made his initial big splash in New Japan Pro Wrestling, where he would win the world title three times and eventually made his way to WCW in 1990 to become a big-time star in 1992. Through feuds with the likes of Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mick Foley, Van Vader dominated WCW as a three-time World Heavyweight Champion, Vader's third world title reign ended when he lost to Flair in an emotional match with Flair's career on the line. White then competed in WWF in the mid-90s under the moniker Vader, and he remained similarly dominant as he came within an eyelash of winning the WWF Championship from Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam in 1996. Today, Vader competes on occasion as he mentors his son Jesse, who's an aspiring professional wrestler.
And the only thing I got to say about that is it's an absolute travesty that he never won any kind of strap in the WWE.
Mm-hmm. Number three, Mankind. The deranged superstar, otherwise known as Mick Foley, made himself a star in the WWE through his pinpoint portrayal of a mentally disturbed masked madman known simply as Mankind. It was Mankind's brutal feud with The Undertaker that would eventually propel him to new heights in the WWE, despite ironically having to fall almost 20 feet through a table in a brutal Hell in a Cell match to achieve those heights. As one of the original charter members of the WWE's wildly successful Attitude Era, Mankind became the WWE Champion in a pre-taped Monday Night Raw in 1999 that was infamously spoiled by WCW's announcer Tony Schiavone.
I remember that.
At a time when WCW was losing in the TV ratings war.
Well, that'll bring us to the big number two, and that's the Big Red Monster, Kane. Now, Kane is one of the most tenured superstars on the WWE roster, dating back to his days as Isaac Yankum DDS and, of course, the Fake Diesel. Now, Glenn Jacobs' gimmick of The Undertaker's little brother stuck when he hit the scene at the debut Hell in a Cell match at WWE's Bad Blood pay-per-view in September of 1997. He has since terrorized the WWE as Kane, who is one of only two WWE superstars in history to win the World Championship, the WWE Championship, and the ECW Championship. Now, even though he unmasked in 2003, Kane remains one of the longest-serving veterans on the WWE roster and was rewarded for his service 2 years ago with a lengthy title run that included multiple clean wins against The Undertaker. Now, with the return of his iconic mask a couple months ago on Raw, Kane's career looked like it was ready for yet another revival, but unfortunately, he's been involved in a rather lackluster, campy storyline with John Cena, which, of course, is set to culminate in an ambulance match this Sunday.
I don't know, this program alone makes me think that maybe Kane shouldn't be even on this list. But that's just my opinion.
Okay, that brings us to our number one.
Rey Mysterio is helplessly. Randy Orton methodical here now. And this is a damn shame that Triple H had to end Rey Mysterio's hope this way.
It just shows you.
Orton parading around with Mysterio. And Rey, hanging on to the top rope.
Was there any really a doubt, Corey? Was there a doubt?
No, I didn't think so.
Oscar Gutierrez, better known by his ring name Rey Mysterio, has got to be considered one of the greatest masked wrestlers of all time for his accolades on both the international circuit and on the national wrestling scene. Now, unlike the majority of his fellow masked luchadors, Rey Mysterio became a huge star in America in addition to his fame and popularity in Mexico. Now, the product of San Diego competed in WCW, where he was easily the most popular cruiserweight and even holds victories over the likes of Kevin Nash, despite his diminutive frame. Now, Mysterio didn't miss a beat when he eventually signed with the WWE in 2002. I mean, Mysterio's accolades include being a three-time WCW Cruiserweight Champion, a three-time WWE Cruiserweight Champion, a multiple-time WWE and WCW Tag Team Champion, a two-time Intercontinental Champion, and a three-time World Champion, holding the World Heavyweight Championship twice and the WWE title once. Mysterio was also the winner of the 2006 Royal Rumble, and he currently holds the record for the longest time served in a Rumble match at just over 62 minutes. Now, Mysterio inherited his gimmick from his uncle Rey Mysterio Sr., and like many next-generation Lucha Libres, he surpassed his predecessor on the strength of a career that will definitely be considered Hall of Fame caliber, no matter who you ask.
There you go. Top five masked wrestlers.
WWE wrestlers.
Oh, that's right. With Rey Mysterio being number one.
Yeah, well, I mean, no other.
I don't think you can argue against
that.
No,
definitely not.
No.
The guy's got almost as many accolades as Edge.
Do you think we see the return of Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania this year?
That's a good question. That'd be huge. I think the crowd would go nuts. I know I'd go nuts if we saw Rey Mysterio come back.
in what capacity? Let's just think about this for 1 second. Which capacity could we see Ray return?
Well, maybe he's a surprise entrant in a match, or he runs in and I don't know.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
He's kind of a guy that people have a bit forgotten about. He could have been a surprise entrant into the Rumble, but I know he's not fully healed yet, so maybe we won't see him at WrestleMania.
It'd be kind of cool if we did, though.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards your opinion. I don't think we'll see him.
No. All right, Elimination Chamber this Sunday.
I'm telling you, I'm calling it right now. Both champions retain. You watch.
Hmm. A glorified house show is what you're saying.
Both champions retain and Kane over John Cena. That's my prediction. But I've been completely dead wrong before, so
yeah.
Who knows how it's going to go. They could change everything at the last minute, which they've been known to do before, of course.
I think if it's not Daniel Bryan, it's definitely going to be Wade Barrett. It's got to be.
Doesn't it just seem odd to you that in both of these chamber matches, you've only got two guys that you can really see winning it, and the other four just...
Filler,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that. That you want to go into a match like this with...
thinking anybody can win.
Exactly, and yeah. I don't have that feeling at all.
Yeah, no, and it's just a glorified six-person rumble, really.
Mm-hmm. All right, that'll do it this week for Smack Talk Radio Live. Again, if you want to check out anything related to our radio show, www.smacktalkradiolive.com. And of course, join in facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Don't forget about our email address, onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. Send us your thoughts. If they're cool, they're good, we'll of course put them on the air.
Next week on Smack Talk Radio Live on Thursday, it's already confirmed, Corey Basso catching us up on the local wrestling.
Beautiful.
Scene.
We've been missing Corey.
And you and I will be back Monday for SRL on a Monday night.
Of course. Don't miss it. 9 o'clock on Monday night.
I'm Corey Callahan.
I am, of course, James McDonald.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
Goodbye.
And touch the flame where the streets are